Hello and welcome to episode 98 of the Card Hoarder Podcast, your weekly source for Magic Online news, community, and finance. Be sure to check out cardhoarder.com for buying and selling Magic Online singles with round-the-clock customer service. My name is Connor, I'm the host and editor for the podcast, joined as I am always by my two co-hosts, Nathaniel and Dave. How's it going, guys?
Going pretty well. How are you, Connor?
Doing good. Nathaniel, how's it going?
It's going good. I had a good Magic week, so that's always nice. But like Skirk Prospector, for example, is probably the highlight. All the comments were like, they're really, really trying to push the Onslaught Block Goblins deck, which I loved. Seeing that as a thing is very exciting for me. And also the team did really well, generally speaking, this weekend with Noah Walker got top 8 in the Legacy Grand Prix. And I think Shaheen won his RPTQ. Jack Kiefer reached silver status. And Marco also, I think he qualified via his RPTQ as well. So lots of qualifications, and it means we'll have more players at the Pro Tours, which is always a good thing.
Awesome. Very nice. Everything coming up Millhouse for Card Hoarder. That's good stuff to hear. We also have a special guest joining us this week. He is the co-host of the Lords of Limited podcast. He is at Lord Tupperware on Twitter. We have Ethan Sachs. Welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really happy to be here.
Yeah, so we have to start off the show with, what's the trophy count at?
Oh, man. Modern Cube has been kind of wrecking me, if that's the format I'm currently drafting. I've not drafted Rix for a few weeks now, but I just got my fourth Modern trophy on stream just about an hour ago. But I've been having some tricky times. I don't know if you guys have been drafting that at all, but it's weird. It's a weird iteration of Cube this time around.
I don't think ever. Maybe I used to do in paper, but for some reason online, it just doesn't appeal to me. You guys seem to do a lot of drafting, but we'll get into that. Let's start off with, because our listeners might not be familiar with you and your work. So give a quick summary of your MTG playing days. Like, how long have you been playing? Favorite formats other than limited, if you have any.
Sure. So I started playing Magic when I was a kid, like around 4th edition. Like, I didn't really know what I was doing. My older brothers played, and I played from like 4th through Odyssey, and then I stopped, and then I got back into it at Scars of Mirrodin, when my older brother introduced me to drafting, and it sort of basically just took over my life, and I've been drafting aggressively since then. I exclusively play online. I started streaming about 3.5 years ago on and off, but then really started buckling down and doing it pretty aggressively and seriously about a year ago. And then a little bit after that, I started a podcast called Lords of Limited with another Twitch streamer, Mr. Metronome, Ben Wernie. And he and I have been doing that podcast every week since about July of last year. That's basically my whole deal. I do the podcast and I do my streaming. Most days you can find me drafting up a storm on Twitch.
Very nice. That's kind of scary. We basically started playing the same time and we got back into Magic and drafted around the same time.
Is that right?
Yeah, I started around 4th edition, Mirage, Visions, around that time. I got back in Mirrodin Besiege, so just a set after that. But that's when I started playing Draft, Mirrodin Besiege, Scars. That was the exact same time.
Yeah, pretty crazy. It's not remembered as being a very good limited format, Mirrodin Besieged or New Fire
Exia. I loved
Exia.
It.
Really?
I actually loved it. Yeah. I enjoyed it. I don't know. It was like my first time drafting, and I was like, oh, this is fun.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Bad formats are always a little bit subjective in that way. I know, looking back, that format's probably bad, but I like top 8 of the PTQ in that format and stuff, so I'm like, it was great. It was the best of times, you know?
It's yeah.
Yeah.
Dave's feelings on formats relate entirely to his win percentage, right?
No, I mean, I can relate with that. I mean, I guess I'm fondness to that format. It's my first 3-0 in limited, so that's Hero Blade Hold. You carried me.
Oh my god, yeah. Yeah, that's a fair limited card right there.
Yeah, a little bit. So when you're talking about Lords of Limited, yeah, you said you've only started it over a year, which is relatively young for a Magic podcast.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask, with the popularity of limited resources, which has been going on for a long time, and I've seen other limited casts come and go since then, what drove you to start a limited-focused podcast this late in the game?
Yeah, it is a good question because we are two dudes talking about limited, and limited resources is that very same model. And I have been listening to that podcast religiously for, I think, about as long as I've been like replaying Magic, like since Scars. So basically like just after John Lauk started as the co-host. And I really, really like that podcast. I especially think it's great with Luis on now. But around the time of my like seriously grinding and streaming, like one of the things that I am known for is like I do basically 200 plus drafts per format. Rivals is like the first, I think I stopped around 150 for Rivals, and that's low, but like Amonkhet, Hour of Devastation, Ixalan, crack 200 for all those, because that's all I do is draft. But I was really
hold on a second. Can I step in on that? Because that's an insane number of drafts to do. So what pod do you play? And I assume your win percentage must be so high that you're actually, are you one of the few that we talk about that actually makes money playing limited on Magic Online?
No, but you know, I have a few sponsorships and that sort of helps me get in the black. But I play in the intermediate leagues. I find those to be, I've dipped into the competitive queues a little bit, but I find the intermediate leagues better for streaming because it's nice for the viewers, I think, oftentimes to get to see a deck, even if it scrubs out in round one, to get to see it like play rounds two and rounds three, see its potential. Right. And it certainly allows me to have a slower bleed. But my win percentage usually hovers around 67% for any given format. which I think GoatBots has an EV calculator. I think they would put that as depends on the set and whether or not that's like making money or not. But it's usually floating around break even. It's really hard to make a profit in just playing drafts.
Absolutely. That's why I heard the number and I was curious.
No, it's mostly my addiction is driving that that number of drafts and not my wallet.
Right, of course.
Yes. So it was around that time in Amonkhet when I was looking for a podcast for me. I wanted a podcast or I wanted content for limited for someone who was drafting a ton. And I know that, you know, the amount that I'm drafting is not anywhere expected for a normal human being, but you know, anyone who is drafting the set, let's say 50 times, that's not ridiculous. 50, 75, that doesn't seem that ridiculous for someone who primarily plays limited. And I didn't really feel like they were given the goods during that set. I didn't feel like they were maybe devoting the time per episode for what I wanted out of like the strategy based podcasts. That's not a knock on them. You know, they clearly have a good tap on their listener base and what their patrons want, and they're growing all the time. And it's just not any sort of criticism other than it wasn't what I wanted. And so I don't know how it came about. Sort of Ben, my podcast partner, was in my Twitch chat and we were talking about, I don't know, the subject of a podcast came up and I was like, I would love to do one, but I also know that I'm not going to, like, I'll put in the time and effort for creating like the content for it and writing the show notes, but I'm not going to want to spend any time like doing the editing side of things. And he was like, I'd do that. So we started talking and started planning the podcast. And I think we've really, over the course of time, made a mark in terms of how we are different than limited resources. I mean, we really do dive in deeper and deeper to the format week by week. We do very few, like, you know, quote unquote level up style shows that limited resources is known for. We've gone away from the card by card set evaluation and sort of made our own statement with these like crash course episodes that we do when new sets come out, where we look at like the stats for cards in terms of like how the removal matches up against the creatures and what the average power and toughness is for things, and trying to get people like as primed for their pre-releases and the first week of drafts as they can, and sort of assume that they're going to be having our show in conversation with a written set review or an audio set review, that sort of thing. You know, our podcast is for a very serious, probably mostly based online limited grinder, which we may be shooting ourselves in the foot in terms of like a pretty narrow audience, but I feel very confident that I'm creating the kind of show that I would want to listen to.
For sure. And hey, we do the same thing. We mainly talk about Magic Online, so you're not alone in that aspect. Is what you kind of said, that's kind of what drove me to your podcast, because I think I saw you guys around, because I usually try to pay attention to all the stuff that's on MTG Cast in particular. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, they're doing set reviews. I'm like, oh, okay. I always keep my eye on what the topics are. Like, okay, they're doing some new stuff. All right, I'll check it out. So it was really cool. And I noticed a lot of analytics. Are you very driven by analytics as a person in general, or is this just when it comes to limited? Does this just become, is the audience demanded more, you know, what's the trophy count and what's your win percentage? Because I always noticed you guys always start off with it and you always mention it.
Yeah, well, so we're both very competitive. Ben and I are both, that's one of the ties that bind us. So that's a big thing. I think the impetus to put like our trophy count and win percentage at the start of the show, at least early on, was because we're basically nobodies. I mean, we're Twitch streamers, and now we're both partnered streamers, but like, no one knows us, and so why would they like listen to us or want to take our advice for things? And so I think that was sort of like the idea for putting that first was, okay, so like, these guys know what they're doing, they're drafting a bunch, and their win percentages aren't embarrassing, so maybe I'll listen to what they have to say. And now I think it's just sort of there as tradition, and also, you know, okay, a nice healthy rivalry between the two of us.
Sure, that makes sense. Did you do it before the podcast though?
I started, when did I start like actually keeping track of my win rate? Was, I think, Modern Masters 3, and that was around the time when I started streaming. That was like a similar thing, like keeping that like as a stat on stream was another way of like, I don't know, trying to like garner viewers. Or I remember around the time like my first like big spike in viewers on stream was, I was like tied for like a day, I was like tied for number one in trophies in the Amonkhet draft queues. I got to put that as a clickbaity title thing, you know, and so that sort of thing I think is, for some people who have maybe never tuned into our podcast or to my stream before, that's something that might hook a kind of spiky competitive player.
Dave, get on that, man.
I mean, I could win a trophy, I could begin.
All he has to do is just put, like, Irish Nationals champion, done. Boom.
He did. Yeah. For, like, a day.
No, every day, man. I would milk that for years.
I need to start saying bronze level pro, because for the people who know what that means, they might laugh at me boasting about it. For the people who don't know what it means, it might sound impressive, right?
Yeah, and there's probably way more people who don't know what it means, so there you go.
That's true. We asked you, you know, LR is very similar, and what made you kind of start a podcast when there's something so similar out there. But do you feel that maybe you being a bit more like the average grinder helps you in content, opposed to, you know, this podcast run by two professionals of the game?
I certainly feel like I'm in the trenches a lot more than they are. I mean, I obviously don't know their personal lives, but I know that LSV has a full-time job. I do not. I mean, for people who don't know anything about me, I'm an actor, so I do theater and on-camera stuff, and I also have a bartending job, and I have, you know, lots of little odd jobs. But streaming is a lot of, you know, because I have all these sort of things that fill in gaps in my day, I'm able to carve out a pretty decent chunk of my time for streaming and content creation at the moment. So I feel like I'm in the trenches a lot in terms of drafting. I think probably fair to say, if I'm doing 200 plus drafts of a format, I'm drafting more than they are. But so I think that does give me a leg up on content creation, or for the podcast, in terms of like seeing shifts. I mean, I've talked about this on the podcast this week, actually, but I remember during Hour of Devastation draft, like when people realized that like multicolored green was like a really good deck with Oasis Ritualist, there was like 2 to 3 weeks in the intermediate queues where you just like couldn't draft a green deck. Or if you wanted to, you were fighting with like 3 or 4 other people at your table for that deck. And that sort of metagame shift doesn't often happen a lot, but that's the sort of thing that I'm interested in, and that's the sort of thing that I feel like I can report on pretty accurately because of how much I am playing the current format.
And do you think it helps you also maybe be a bit more relatable? Like people maybe could see themselves in your spot. I don't know if they could see themselves in LSV's spot, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I never thought about that before. That's an interesting thought. I mean, I hope so. I think one of the things that, I mean, this goes into like, you know, when people want to start streaming or whatever. I think when you stream for a small audience, or when you go to watch a stream that has a small audience, you're looking for interaction, right? Like when I go to watch someone who has 10 viewers, I'm doing that because I want them to talk to me. I want to type to them and I want them to respond back to me. And I think that was maybe an advantage I had as a smaller streamer, and still do. When people come into my chat, I'm very eager to respond to their questions, or if they have a line that I didn't see, or vice versa, if they have a question about what I'm doing. I feel like I think I have a sort of authority on how to play some formats, but I'm also not so like, you know, I'm not LSV, so people are going to be more ready to probably question the things I do, but also feel, I think, more comfortable to ask those questions of me than they maybe would of someone who was like Luis's status.
Okay. Well, you, along with mentioning that you do some acting, do some bartending, I think from a tweet that I saw from you over a week ago, you do some coaching, right, for Magic?
I do, yeah. I've started this a little bit. I have a handful of students at the moment. One of my many hats that I've worn in the past is I did test prep tutoring for high school students for like SAT, ACT. That's a college admittance test for kids here in the States. So I have a lot of like one-on-one coaching tutoring experience. I think that's one of the things that's one of the reasons that I wanted to get into streaming is I feel like I'm good at articulating my thought process. I think good at like pointing things out, and I feel like I'm a fairly good teacher. And so that translated pretty easily when folks started to ask me about doing some magic coaching. So I do some limited coaching for folks who are interested. And that is sort of, I try and leave that as much up to the student about what they want to do, if they want to focus on in-game decisions or draft decisions, if they want to be the one piloting drafts and gameplays, if they want to be Skyping in watching me do that, if they want to, you know, you can fire up a couple decks in a friendly league and play against each other there on Skype and talk through decision points, that sort of thing. But I really try and leave it up to the student to see what they want to do to get better. But it is something that I do offer.
Okay. Yeah, because I was really interested to hear what a typical session was like, because coaching is something we really haven't discussed much on the cast, and it's becoming more and more prominent in Magic. It seems like a lot more people are talking about it. Seems like a lot more people are interested about it. I'm not sure where this is coming from. Maybe it's just they've seen it in other games. They see it in poker, maybe.
Yeah.
And it's just getting more popular now, finally.
I mean, it makes a kind of sense, but also, so for poker, it makes way more sense because that's like an actually lucrative game to play, where like it feels like investment in that can yield a greater reward. For Magic, most of my students are just casual players, but people who like take this hobby seriously and are competitive. That's, I think, a pretty big driving force in people who are interested in Magic coaching. But it does often surprise me, but maybe it shouldn't, because I mean, Magic is an expensive hobby. And so I feel like if you are invested enough to play it and you want to get better at it, it would make sense that you would also invest in a way to get better at it beyond just, you know, the numerous amounts of free content that is out there.
Like, even for casual players, when it comes to that, I mean, everybody likes to win. And I think it greatly increases the amount people enjoy it, not just to win, but to know that you're playing well. And I think that's true even of casual players. So it makes sense to me for even a broad range. But yeah, I could see how it would skew towards the spikier type players. But yeah, I think it's for everybody, personally.
Mm-hmm.
Have you got to see any of your students, you know, get better yet, get some better results?
Yeah. It's pretty cool. I mean, it's not, the limited rating is not something that I track very much, just because I, like, you know, it goes up and it goes down, and it depends on, like, I don't know what the algorithm is for how it's figured out, but it, you know, it often is affected by your opponent as well. And that is something that a lot of my students do care about. And when they get to come back and say, like, oh, my like limited rating is going up, That's a very cool thing. When they're excited about that, I'm excited about that.
Brian Gottlieb on the Game Podcast, he claimed a lot of MTG coaches are doing it wrong. He was not very specific. Hmm. But what do you feel about his assessment, though? Like, what should they avoid when coaching in Magic?
For me, I think the biggest thing that makes a difference is I think you should encourage your student to be the pilot and not watch you play. Because I feel like with the advent of YouTube and Twitch, when you're watching someone stream, you're basically, depending on who you're watching, but you're basically watching someone like pilot their deck and explain their thought process about why they're doing things and point out mistakes they made or the mistakes their opponent made. And that feels like that would be the equivalent of a session with someone while you were piloting a deck. Now, maybe you have the opportunity to say, okay, like, before I make my decision here, what would you do? But I think it's 10 times more valuable for them to be the one to do it, because let's say they like make a misclick or a misplay, that's going to be instilled in them so much harder if they're the ones piloting the deck versus if you make the mistake or you make the misplay or go down a line that didn't quite work. I think they have a tendency to feel removed from that. Like, oh, maybe I wouldn't have made that decision had I been piloting the deck. So you sort of like put them in the hot seat. I think that's really the biggest difference that I would say I would make.
Yeah, that's always the fear of getting into being coached, I would say, because I've done lessons for like drums for years and years, but it's always daunting going one-on-one with somebody. And it's like, all right, you're judging how I play. Now I have to perform. I mean, just playing drums is more a performance aspect too, but I guess Magic is kind of like that, because I've always thought about doing some coaching for Magic because I've always wanted to be a better player, particularly Legacy as well. Like, I feel like I hit a wall. I've definitely hit a plateau in my life when it comes to those kind of formats. Mm. So I've definitely considered it, and I'm always kind of hesitant. I'm not sure why. Dave, I actually wanted to ask you, have you ever considered coaching? I know you probably don't want to, mainly just because of, I'm sure, like, money considerations, but have you considered it though?
For me to get coaching or to give coaching?
Both.
I would never give coaching because I think I want to do positive things to the Magic community. I don't think anyone needs
oh, come on.
In their life. But I've considered getting coaching. The large issue with Magic is for coaching, and it's really hard to measure. I think for someone at my level, I think for people who are kind of semi-casual looking to break into competitive, it's great because they can have really measurable changes with small corrections from good coaches. If you just explain some Magic theory to someone that hasn't heard it before, they jump huge percentage points. You know, if people don't get what a virtual card advantage is, one that's talked about a lot, and it's really prominent in the current set, where Sailor of Means is essentially virtual card advantage and lets games go longer because he cancels out a bunch of attackers. And that doesn't always happen in every limited set, but understanding concepts like that are really important. And someone who learns that for the first time jumps up 5-10% in their game. I'm at a stage where, I'm not saying I'm extremely good, but my jumps are 1% at a time. I get better through tiny iterations that are really hard to see. So for paying someone to coach me, I'd have to be paying them a decent amount of money for the people I've seen that I'd like to coach me. And I don't know if I would get to see improvement for my investment. Or if I was improving, I wouldn't know. I wouldn't know if I was, if that makes some amount of sense.
Yeah, it does. And I guess that's why I've said I've considered it, because I am the target audience of what you just said, basically. If I took some lessons, I'd probably see some huge jumps, especially because I haven't played a ton of highly competitive tournaments. I've only played two or three GPs in my lifetime, and they're spread out by 2 or 3 years. So if I actually dived in and actually did it, I'd probably see some more results as well.
Yeah, and I think coaching is a great idea. I'm glad it's happening more in Magic. I'm glad that people like Eaton are jumping on it, not just like pros that have some spare time and have this like design. Someone that's so dedicated to grinding, I'm really happy to see them get into it. But another thing that shows massive improvements, and I'm trying to get into more, and you'll hear a lot of pros talk about this, is you just talk about Magic a lot. If you find a group of people that are your level or better, and this is kind of what coaching is based on as well, you're finding someone that is better than you, and you just get to talk to them about Magic consistently. And that's where I'm at and trying to achieve. I saw Ifro and someone else, very good, I can't remember the other player, was giving out lessons, and I was considering booking a couple just to get to pick the mind of a very good player.
Yeah, that thing you said about like surrounding yourself by or just talking to people who are as good or better than you in Magic. I can't recommend streaming enough to people, because I feel like, for better or worse, Twitch chat is at least helpful for you to, or streaming is helpful for you to like talk through your lines of play. And I feel like the easiest way to figure out why you're going to do something bad is to put it, or that you're going to do something bad is that you put it into words. You start like, well, I'm going to make this play because XYZ. And as soon as you put it into words, you realize, oh, that's a terrible idea. And I also think that like since starting the podcast, the fact that I get to talk to Ben every week about Limited, like that has just made me an exponentially better player. So, you know, I don't know how you find that if you don't have people in your local game store or your area. Like, you know, there's people out there in the internet that are going to want to discuss Matt. Like, I found someone who is like my equal in terms of like his addiction and hunger for limited play. And that has like greatly improved my play as well.
I think you might be the first person ever to recommend streaming as a way to get better at Magic. But and you speak probably the most highly of Twitch chat of any streamer I've ever met. So good for you. I like your outlook.
Well, thank you. I try and keep it positive. I mean, I know with the recent whatever the flavor of the week last week about ghosting and is it good or is it bad, and that I can't believe that there's even a debate there, but you know, I've started to make jokes in Twitch chat every time they make, you know, lines of play that I think are actually good. I'm like, oh yeah, see this amazing advantage I'm getting from streaming. But you know, I do think that having to justify why you're going to do something is one of the biggest ways to improve your play, because I do really think that the difference between thinking a lot through a line of play or thinking through a line of a draft pick and talking it out, I think is pretty big. And if you're a listener at home who doesn't want to stream or whatever, I would encourage you the next time you play a game, just like talk through your lines like you're streaming or making a YouTube video. And I guarantee you, you will play better because you have to put into words why you're doing something.
On the subject of Twitch chat, just a little bit. I've got this thing about it recently, and I want to know if other streamers get it. So certainly, there are advantages. Joking aside, there are some advantages. I get to talk to a lot of people that I wouldn't have got to talk to if I didn't stream. Lars Dam is an example of this. He's on different streams all the time chatting to people, and I've definitely got to hear some of his inputs, and he has an insane win percentage on Magic Online, the Mox competitor. But have you ever gotten to the situation where you're doubting your own lines because someone that you know in your Twitch chat that has given you good lines before has now given you one that you think is awful?
Yes.
And you're stuck between thinking, am I the awful one, or has this person come up with an awful play and I can't trust what they're saying? It's like the one guard that lies and one that doesn't lie conundrum, I find.
Yeah, somehow. I mean, there are so many things that happen through Twitch chat that make me a worse player. Most of my Magic playing is on stream. And for anyone who doesn't stream and thinks that you get an advantage from Twitch chat, you are discounting the amount of multitasking that is happening while you're streaming. You are trying to be entertaining. You are trying to articulate your thoughts. You are trying to read chat and respond to chat. You're also, maybe you have music playing or whatever. You're trying to play fast. If you've never done that before, you really have no business talking about the quote-unquote advantage that Twitch chat gives you. But that aside, from Modern Cube currently is a great example. I really started out struggling in this format, and someone whose opinion I respect in chat a lot was saying they were having success with it, and then were giving me suggestions about picks or deck inclusions or sideboarding options, and I was like, if that is true, I like feel like I have no idea what I'm doing, but I really just think that this person was wrong. But so it's like so hard to balance that because they've given you good advice in the past. And like, if you have someone like Lars Dom, or you have someone who is like highly respected in the community, for some random reason, Chris Pakula comes into my chat from time to time. And then it's like, okay, I like really want to make sure that like Chris is heard, and like if he has thoughts, like I want to like take them into consideration, because clearly this person is better at this game than I am. The biggest mistake I see small streamers make is you don't want to watch someone who just like waits 30 seconds for the chat delay and then makes the decision that chat tells them to do. Like, I want to watch this person make decisions for better or for worse,
and not just argue with chat about certain picks. Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Cube season has to be my favorite for arguing with the chat, because all the cards are good. And they can't remember this. Like, oh, that's definitely a first pick. They're all first picks. That's the point of Cube. This is the one I like and I have had strong results with. So we're going to go with that. Oh, I can't believe that wield. I can. Every card in that pack was good. That's the point of Cube.
That's my favorite thing in Cube for Twitch, is when people say that card will definitely wheel, that card will never wheel. Like, Cube is the format where you have no idea. Yeah. What is going to wheel and what won't. You cannot make decisions or like statements like that. It's absurd.
Especially Magic Online. It's the Wild West. Who knows what's going to happen?
Who knows who those seven other people at your table are?
I just rare draft in Cube, even though it's Phantom.
That's good.
Cube is tough because I don't play Cube like Connor, because I think the learning curve is so steep to learn the format that I know I'm not going to be able to play enough to be good enough at any point. Whereas if you play the regular sets, you can learn enough about it that you're not like just feeling completely stupid when you're doing it. But Cube, there's so much, like, especially if you don't know all the cards and they're all like pretty complicated often. I think it's much harder to play Cube and much harder to learn Cube, but I know it's super popular among limited players. So it's a tough bridge to gap for me.
Yeah, I hear that for sure. Our episode this week was actually on Lords of Limited was about that very thing, like learning a new format, both like a regular set like Ixalan or Rivals of Ixalan, but also like a master set or Cube, because I do feel like the threshold to learn Cube is so, so high. But also once you reach that threshold, they're basically all the same. Like, there's like the same like 60% of cards overlap all like the Vintage, Legacy, Modern Cube online, and then like the card changes that happen are pretty easy to like figure out, oh, like that card that slots into this archetype or whatever. But yeah, the learning curve is very, very steep.
So I'm guessing you don't start students on Cube. I'm assuming unless they're interested in the...
Correct, yeah. Most of the people, I don't think I've done any Cube. I did a little master's work with some people, but most people seem to be interested in the regular limited sets. I think mostly because of what you said, that they, if you're investing in that set, it's going to be out for a lot longer. It's going to be out for months, whereas like Cube is only going to be out for a couple weeks.
And then doesn't you reach the like pinnacle, and then it's gone.
Right, exactly.
If you don't mind me jumping ahead a little bit, Connor, you mentioned you had some strong feelings about the ghosting topic that's been going around Eton. What do you think of ghosting as a concept? I think we all agree that streamers do not have any sort of advantage. I think like they have, in fact, a disadvantage, I think, if they're streaming large events. But what are your feeling towards ghosts and it just being a thing?
Okay, so here's my quick rundown on ghosting. One, like the base level here is that it is a breach of the Twitch terms of service. That should be enough to talk about it. But to dive deeper for Magic in particular, and especially for, you know, like, let's not even talk about like high level events. Let's talk about just like grinding some intermediate queues, and then like you ghost someone for what, like a pack's worth of value. It just sort of boggles my mind. Like, we're playing a game for fun. We're not playing a game for profit if you're playing draft leagues on Magic Online. So I don't understand the impetus to ghost. Streaming is so good for the Magic community. Content creation is so good for the Magic community that trying to, like, punish someone for doing that really bothers me, and I don't understand what would compel someone to do that. I also think you are denying yourself the opportunity to get better. You have the opportunity to play a match of Magic and then go back and watch it from your opponent's perspective. It's so valuable. When I get paired up against other streamers, it's so fun to get to go back and watch the games from their perspective. That's one of the things that makes participating in the streamer showdown great, is because you get to see, oh, was I playing around this trick and they had it? Or like, oh, I really made this incredible misplay, and if I had like done X, Y, and Z, or they were playing around this, and oh, I feel so good because I made them think I had this trick and I didn't, all that sort of stuff. You deny yourself that opportunity by just ghosting them. You don't get to learn, you don't get to grow as a player, and you don't get that, like, I don't know, that sort of like fun of watching the match from someone else's perspective. I've never played in a high level event online, but like making people play with delays or hand hiders sort of like defeats the purpose of streaming. So like, just don't ghost. It seems very simple to me to not do it.
That's a very fair perspective. I don't think either perspective is completely wrong. I've always been on the side of, I think it's stupid to do, exactly like you. I've played against streamers and people I know that are recording, and I just want to see what happens later. I want to know their opinions on the match after, because my goal is always to get better at Magic, not to make more Mickey Mouse dollars online, you know? Right. But as a streamer, the only thing I would ask is, if you were going to ghost me, please have the courtesy to stick around as a viewer number afterwards.
Dave. Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah.
My back in the day, my approach to it was that I just liken it to sort of unsportsmanlike conduct. And, you know, if people are going to do it, then they're going to do it. But I'm not going to change my behavior, because I think I was streaming like it was a Mox event, and I was doing a winning in for top 8. And I ended up losing, but everyone's like, oh, you have to put on a delay. You have to put on a delay. I'm like, you know what? If someone really needs to be here that much to try to win, then, you know, then let them do it. But it's a scumbag move. And, you know, you're never going to get rid of scumbag moves. I mean, it's unfortunate, but it will always happen unless WotC does something about it. But I don't even know what they could conceivably do. But I didn't even know it was against the Twitch TOS, but I don't think that, I mean, you know, how are we going to enforce anything like that?
Yeah, no, it's in the Twitch TOS, but unfortunately, Wizards have a policy of not making rules they can't reinforce. It's essentially kind of rule building.
One final thing that I wanted to say about the ghosting thing, which was stated in an article that Mike Sigris wrote a few days ago for Channel Fireball, which was that he said, yes, ghosting is, like, it's detrimental to the community, he's not condoning it at all. But another thing that is not good for the community is for streamers to accuse people of ghosting. It slanders their name. Like, now you're putting this, like, energy out there when you, like, you know, people make weird plays. People play around cards. You know, people are better than you sometimes. So deciding that those mean that you're being ghosted, I think is equally bad for the community. And so once I read that, I was like, you know, I've done that before. I've like put up a hand hider in a stupid little intermediate queue. I'm going to stop doing that. I'm going to stop like trying to accuse people of ghosting when I feel like they're making sketchy plays, because I think that's equally bad for community building.
Well, Twitch chat does it too.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, well, I think one thing we've learned today is you can't control Twitch chat.
No, you can't. You can't, but I'm just, you know, as a general statement, like, anything weird happens, they're like, ghosts,
right.
Ghosts.
Yeah.
I always do it jokingly, of course. Come on. But, I mean, if that's the worst thing that the Twitch chat is doing at that time, oh, I will take that over the garbage that has been spewed at other times. But for the most part, I think streamers have been pretty good about not accusing too many people. I know I've seen Michael Jacob do it a little bit, and ironically, that's kind of where this whole conversation kind of sprung up again from his Pauper tournament.
Right.
I will hold up my hand and say I've definitely done it, and I think that's a really good point that you and Zygris have made now, Ethan. I kind of do it as a passing. I wonder if the only way that they're playing, either they're playing perfectly around a very subset of cards, or I think they're ghosting. That's my analysis of a game. But I can understand how that's like hurtful. I never like pop up a hand hider, or I'm like, oh, they're scum. I'm just like, oh, I wonder if they're watching, because I'm not sure why they'd make that play. But I can definitely see how that's inflammatory, essentially.
Yeah. Just, it was something that I hadn't considered before, and I think it's a valuable thing to consider.
Can I insert a little story about Michael Jacobs here? Do we have time for that, Connor?
Sure. Sure.
It's quick. So when I was streaming, I played against him. So I was paired against him, and I happened to be watching him because it was in between rounds. So I shut off the stream, and then we played a match. We had almost the exact same deck. It was like super clunky. Worked almost the same way in sort of a control-ish way, but I had like a couple more bombs than he did. So my bombs won me the game, or the match. I won. I went into his Twitch stream, and he was just talking about how like horrible I was and how I made all the wrong plays. It was super disheartening. Ouch. Made me feel real bad. So just unrelated, but semi-related.
I think quite related, yeah. I was trying to encourage people in chat. I was like, the person I'm playing against didn't sign up to be ridiculed. I did. So you can talk about me all you want, but like, I would not talk about the opponent. I think that's a pretty good rule of thumb.
Yeah, it's the struggle with commentating as well in general. It's hard to, you have to find that good fine line of just like how to critique somebody's plays and not be offensive. Because of course it comes up during the Legacy GP when people, you're playing a really complex format and you have people that are obviously not experts in said format. So you have to be careful with the way you criticize other people and how they enjoy the game and how they play.
So. Yeah, for sure.
There's a lot of things to consider.
Magic's
when
a hard
playing
game.
Magic. It's hard. It's hard
Magic's
streaming.
A hard game. Amen.
As Ethan's saying, like, yeah, streaming, you know, you have to keep track of how the stream is doing. You know, my stream constantly drops frames. You have to worry about that stuff too. So it's a constant balance. But here on the Card Hoarder podcast, though, we tend to talk about, you know, Magic Online and its many shortcomings. And we've talked about a few of them and how it's been hard to stream. But I want to talk about playing limited on Magic Online specifically. I feel it's one of its strong suits. And as we've outlined here, Ethan, you've jammed a ton of drafts on Magic Online, probably more combined than all of us probably. I would easily put a safe bet on that. So I wanted to ask, is there something missing on Magic Online that can improve the limited experience?
I've been thinking about this question since I saw it listed here yesterday, and I can't really come up with anything. I mean, it sparked me thinking about the advents that they've made in the past that have really improved. One of the things being that the deck building during the draft, I think, is such a huge improvement, not only for like being a better drafter, but also for the speed at which you could then just add lands and submit. And I think the introduction of leagues, I realize that like it doesn't give you that like crisp 8-person pod feeling that you get at a GP or a PT or at your LGS on Friday Night Magic, but it sure is good for streaming for no downtime. So those two improvements I think were pretty big. I'm not sure what else to do. I think it would be nice like if you got that sort of sense of, you know, when like double-faced cards are opened in a pack. in real life and you have to like reveal it to the table. I think that might be a nice thing to add to Magic Online. I'm not sure like why that should be different playing digitally versus not. Like, feels like it should be one rule for both formats or for both ways of playing. That would be something I think could be improved upon. But other than that, I mean, it's a pretty streamlined thing. I'll be interested to see how Limited exists in Arena, if it's a sort of drafting pod, if it's more of a Hearthstone model of like predetermined packs kind of thing. But I'd be interested to see how that plays out on that program.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting a great answer. Just sometimes we just like to theorize on the cast. I've kind of wished that we could do team drafts online. I know that's probably never going to be a possibility, just the logistics. I mean, I think there's ways you can maybe make it work. It's going to take a lot of effort to do, so I don't think they want to put the time and effort into it. But well, would you be excited to see something like Chaos Drafts? Because I know they've hinted at that they're going to bring it to Magic Online this year.
Yes, I would be very excited about Chaos Drafts. I actually just thought of the answer that I want to give to this question, which is, I wish that you could create your own draft pod. I don't see why I can't make a private draft queue, invite 7 friends. We pay the same amount. We pay like the same entry fee. It's the same prize support that exists for, you know, a 6222 or whatever. But I get to play with my friends, like, or I get to play the format that I want to play. Like, why can't we make a Kaladesh, triple Kaladesh draft queue? Why can't I do that myself? Like, on poker software platforms, you can make home games, they're called. Like, you can just like, you know, it's the same. You're playing for money. You're playing for fake money, whatever it is, however you want to set it up. But you get to make it private and invite the people you want. I don't see why that should be so hard for Magic Online.
This is one of my number one wants as a streamer as well. Because a lot of other games have the subscriber modes. Like League of Legends is the example I use. A lot of big streamers are like, let's invite 4. If you're a subscriber, you're going to be put into a random lottery. If you're online now, I'm going to pick 4 of you guys to come play a game with me.
Yeah.
How great would that be on Magic Online? Okay, subscriber hour, I'm going to pick 7 of you guys. Make sure you're online and we'll draft.
Yeah, that sounds great.
I think you used to be able to do that at some iteration of the program, but there was no prizing. So you could play the event, but you would win nothing. So you're opening up.
So I get to light 12 tickets on fire?
Yeah, I mean, depends on what you open, I suppose, but it might only be 11 tickets if you open something worth a ticket. Ooh. But yeah, I mean,
now we're talking.
Yes, unfortunately, I believe you could definitely do sealed that way. I can't remember if you could do draft, and it maybe wasn't just whatever you wanted, which it should be. I mean, I agree. It seems like, you know, if Connor just wanted to play some Innistrad or something, you know, like you would think that would be. If he can get 7 other people to play with him, then maybe. But maybe they're afraid of, you know, splintering the user base and it's not big enough. And there's a lot of reasons why they might not want to do that.
Well, what I'm thinking of is just they're afraid that people will gamble on it, I'm guessing. Because, you know, they know Magic players. We know Magic players. They're going to put some side bets on the line. I think that's maybe where they fear it. But as far as, like, Dave examples, they can give it to certain access to certain streamers. That would be a great idea. Like, only Newmont can do like exclusive drafts, so I think that's a way to maybe balance that idea instead of just giving it to everybody.
Maybe they'll do it on Arena.
You never know.
Magic players have never bet on random drafts at GP, as I'll have you know. What happens is my opponent happened to lose to me and happened to owe me $20 that he's just paying me back.
Right.
Those were never unrelated events.
Yeah, completely separate events.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, nonetheless, Magic Online, it's great for jamming the new set, of course, which is going to be happening shortly, and Dominaria's, of course, coming out soon. But we finally gotten to see some commons officially spoiled, so it's time to share some first impressions of the set. So I'll send it over to Ethan first, since, as you mentioned, the latest Lords of Limited episode was about learning new formats. So give us a little preview on the episode, what you guys talked about, and what your first impressions are of some of the comments that we saw.
Yeah, that's a good question. We didn't focus a ton on Dominaria on our latest set, but my impressions of the format is, 1, it looks sweet.
Yes.
2, I'm very excited for Kicker as a limited mechanic, because having a bunch of cards that essentially have two modes and having a place for mana sinks. I mean, I think mana sinks are generally considered good guideposts to a strong, deep, limited format. And I'm excited about the possibility of the preview cards that we had. We had some inclinations of a sweet red-green ramp Kicker Matters cards. I'm going to be very curious to see, and I don't think we'll get to know until we play with the format, about the abundance of legendary creatures at Uncommon. Because I'm wondering about, like, you know, if you think about for Rivals of Ixalan, if you got a Legion Lieutenant, you wanted to jam as many Legion Lieutenants in your deck as possible for that sweet white black vampires deck. For a lot of the multicolored cards at Uncommon that seem like they're signposts for maybe an archetype, they're all legendary, and so you can't really jam. I mean, not that you were often getting three or four copies of Legion Lieutenant, but this is a triple set, so you know, you have one extra pack to get access to those uncommons. But I'm curious to see like that kind of payoff of like, I carved out this two-color combo for my seat, and I'm getting rewarded, but now can I really play four legendary creatures? No, I can't. So I'm going to be pretty interested to track how that like tension in draft works itself out.
Yeah, it's going to be hard to tell. I mean, we've never really had this big of a push in for like legendary-type cards. I know, Kamigawa, I think, had a lot of like legendary stuff,
yeah.
But did it really matter as much as this?
The legendary matters kind of aspect of Kamigawa was real poor. None of them really mattered. There was like the Anthem effect that only got legends. There was the red uncommon guy that got bigger if you had his brother in play. Brothers Yamabushi, I think, was the name of the card.
Oh, right.
But in general, Time of Need was one of the only cards I think that came up frequently, where it just meant you had two of your legendary permanent like bomb and sealed a bunch of times. It's a one in a green search for a legendary permanent, I think is how it's worded, or legendary creature it might be. So Legendary Matters was a team, but wasn't one that was strong enough to carry anything in limited. I think this might be the first time in limited legendary permanents are actually going to matter.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, we have this new, we were arguing before the cast what to call it. We're going to say a keyword of sorts because we're not sure what to call historic cards. So what historic cards are, they can be artifacts, legendaries, and sagas. And sagas are new enchantments which aren't legendary, which is a little confusing when I look back at it. I was like, oh, these aren't legendaries. So also the sagas, just they look very unique, so you'd think they'd be legendaries. So to me, that's a weird thing. But historic, you think it's going to be a major player in the set, though. It seems like that's going to be the go-to thing of whether this set is going to be successful or not.
There were a handful of junk common artifacts, or maybe junk is perhaps too harsh a word, but the sort of spectrum of
role players.
Of like, yeah, role players to, I think, 14th pick draft cards, but they're artifacts, and that leads me to believe, like, you know, one of the things that I've tried to take on is to trust R&D for sets. Like, when you see a mechanic or you see a card that seems like it's not very good, like, to try and figure out like how to build around it or what slot it goes in, because it feels like in modern Magic, more often than not, they know what they're doing and they're creating an archetype where those cards fit in. So I've been trying to see, like, it's interesting to see, like, okay, so there's a lot of these like little kind of rinky-dink artifacts. Maybe that's a clue for this theme of like wanting those to trigger that ability.
Yeah, I've seen several cards that have a sac artifact. You get an ability. I think the blue one draws a card. The red one deals two damage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Of the historic payoffs are very powerful. More at uncommon and rare. So not all the common payoffs are that powerful, but there's still, I think you're correct, and I think there's a reason these are here. The draft format is looking pretty sweet. I'm glad you mentioned Kicker. And for those out there who haven't played with something like Kicker, it's a little bit before my time too. It plays out a lot like Morph, where the front side of most of these Kicker cards are fine, and they're like 2 and 3 drops and 4 drops. Some of them are well-statted, but they're mostly on-curve statted. But when you play the Kicker, they are understatted for 7 or 8 mana, but they are this investment later in the game that means you don't have dead draws. The amount of times you're drawing a 2 or a 3 drop on turn 7 or 8, and it might as well be another land for all it's doing to the board state. And this is going to, hopefully, you know, a lot more commons to come, let games be a bit more long-winded, a bit more grindy, which are the limited formats I tend to enjoy a bit more.
Yeah, I think Kicker, from my brief experience with Invasion block flashback drafts on Magic Online, Kicker is one of the more skill testing mechanics because I think it makes people misplay a lot and makes them like hold on to their cards so that they, ooh, well, if I just get two more mana, then I get this sweet benefit, when oftentimes just like playing your spells is a good thing to do. So I'd be excited to have that, not only for it being a mana sink, as you said, to like lead to a grindier format, but also I think it's going to cause people to misplay a lot, which I'm looking forward to as well.
Yeah, I think one of the perfect examples, a card, Academy Drake. So it's just Wind Drake. It's 2 and a blue for a 2/2 flyer. And if you kick it for 4, it comes into play with 2 counters. So for 6 mana, it's a 4/4 flyer. Or sorry, 7 mana, which is a little understated. And a lot of people are going to be faced with this decision on turn 2. Do I use my mana really efficiently and play like my 3 mana Drake, who's going to get a certain amount of damage in and be a decent creature? Or I don't have any big drops in my hand. Do I play my another 2-drop instead, inefficient use of my mana this turn, and save it as a 7-drop? And if you have to make those decisions early on in Limited already, I'm pretty excited for the set. That's, as you said, a real skill testing.
I think the biggest thing that's going to happen is when they draw that card on turn 5.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, do I play this as a 3-mana 2/2 now, or do I wait and get greedy? And I think that's where the skill testing thing is going to come in.
Yeah, reading the game and the pacing of the game is super important. Yeah. Not a skill. I think not a skill many people have left.
Yeah.
It's good tension in gameplay, and I love how Wizards has been able to bring fun and exciting mechanics from old-time Magic and kind of bring it in and kind of modernize it. So I wanted to go over maybe some commons. Are there any commons that caught your guys' eyes off the bat here?
Windrake was one of my big ones. I think that's like going to be pretty decent. Beyond that, I'm trying to check if it's a common or uncommon. The 2-mana ramp guy for Kicker.
He's uncommon.
That's uncommon, I think. Although this set, man, it's really hard to tell what is common and uncommon. Yeah. I have to double check every time, which is really annoying.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing now.
I guess I'll ask this then. So Llanowar Elf, is that a common or uncommon?
Common.
Common.
Okay, so we haven't had Llanowar Elf. I mean, obviously that matters for Constructed a lot, but I haven't played with Llanowar Elf that much in Limited because it's been a while since it's been printed. And Elvis Mishdick, whatever, there's been different variations of it. Since I didn't really draft core sets that much, how important is a card like this to Limited?
I think that 1-mana elves are often, if in the top 3, if not the best commons in green in Limited. I think for like whenever they appeared in core sets, I would like read LSV's set review on CFB all the time, and I think he would always have like Arbor Elf or Llanowar Elves or Elvish Mystic, whatever it was, as one of the top commons. I think Arbor Elf was one of the top green commons in Masters 25 that just came out. I expect Llanowar Elves, especially with Kicker as a role player, especially with the like kind of like powerhouse things we're seeing at common and uncommon, I think Llanowar Elves is going to be very strong in this format.
I would tend to agree, I guess a little bit with the caveat of in certain formats, you need all your plays to be impactful in multiple parts of the game. Llanowar Elf can get sometimes a bit worse in certain formats when it's only good on turn 1. Now with Kicker, and especially some very expensive Kicker costs and some Kicker Matter cards in green, I think it's probably going to be great, like Ethan says. But I wouldn't be surprised if it turns out just not impactful enough. The games are so long and grindy, you just need all your cards to do stuff. I remember way back in the day, you used to be chastised for putting Grizzly Bears in your deck for this exact reason.
Mm.
Obviously not as powerful as Llanowar Elf, but I assume it's going to be great, but would keep my eye on the pacing of the format, I guess.
Okay. So any commons catch your eye, Ethan?
Yeah, there's one common. So I feel like coming off the back of Ixalan, I mean, this wasn't really as much of a role player in Rivals of Ixalan, but One with the Wind was sort of like the name of the game in Triple Ixalan. That was probably one of the biggest grown testing cards. That's the 1 and a blue aura to give a creature +2/+2 in flying. And we've got kind of like a mini One with the Wind at common here in Arcane Flight, which is the single blue for an aura that gives a creature +1/+1 in flying. And I sure hope this card is bad, because if it's good, then we're in for a world of hurt or a lot of groaning happening. There hasn't been any like removal really spoiled at the common level that's good. There's like that 1-drop artifact that gives a creature, you can pay 6 to give a creature -5/-5 until end of turn. But so I'd be interested to see like how does the removal at common match up against the creatures, because if the removal is clunky, a card like Arcane Flight is going to be very strong and really going to make this format, I think, at least for me, a nightmare, because I like, if anyone watches my stream or listens to the podcast, you know that I like to do like multicolor nonsense and grindy games, and Arcane Flight just says no to all of that nonsense.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen any bounce yet either, so that's another thing to keep a lookout on.
I'm looking at Mythic Spoiler, and it looks like the whole set is uncommons. I'm trying to figure out. I'm trying to find a set that can show me what the commons are. Like Llanowar Elf, how, like, that is a silver symbol. Like it's
real tough. I've been keeping an eye on the spoilers, and I still have to double check every time I talk about a card.
Yeah, I mean, well, where are you looking? Where you can see
at the letter at the bottom.
Yeah,
look at this. You see
the bottom left.
I look at the C. Ooh. Or the U.
Yeah, okay, so I see the
you just
C
made my life
P.
much better.
Okay, I got another one. And as much as Eden hoped that the new one with the wind, sorry, I've forgotten its name already, is bad, I hope this card is very good, because then it might lead to a pretty interesting format. But Fire Fist Adept is 4 and a red for a 3/3. When it comes into play, you deal X damage to target creature and opponent controls, where X are the number of wizards you control. And yes, we've just come off the back of quite a bad tribal format. So Ixalan, triple Ixalan was just not fun. And then afterwards, RIX really wasn't tribal when we got really down to the nitty gritty of it. But there have been good tribal formats in the past. And I love blue-red is nearly always my favorite combination at the start of draft formats and when it's good. So blue-red wizards, with this being like a marquee common, that would be really cool to me. Little Flame Tongue Kavuak common. That sounds like it could be pretty good and a pretty high pick.
Yeah, I'm down with that. So a card that really catches my eye that might fit into your archetype, Dave, it's not a wizard though, is a Sphinx. It's called Cloud Reader Sphinx, and it's 4U, 3/4 with flying, and ETB Scry 2. So that's it. And usually we get like 3/3 flyers at common in blue. And so this card gets extra point of toughness, and Scry 2 is very powerful. So I'm surprised that they kind of pushed this card. It kind of reminds me of, I think it's called Precinct Chimera. It's from Theros, except that card, you had to cast an instant or a sorcery just to scry one. So we're going to see how this Sphinx fits in with the format. I remember being a little bit too high on Chimera, so I'm going to try and down my expectations of the Sphinx. But this is a card that I am going to keep my eye on for sure.
But there was another card in Theros that was exactly like this, but it cost one more and it had one extra point of power, but it was at uncommon. That card was great.
It was awesome.
And I imagine this is also going to be great.
That was my thinking. So, but again, it's like maybe 3/4 doesn't line up in the format. I mean, that's what you have to keep. True. It's always hard to tell. Whatever the 2/5 and Rival of Ixalan's like, oh, we didn't know that card was going to be good. That just seemed like a junk replaceable common. So you never know with these formats.
How about New Skullduggery? You guys seen this, the fungal infection?
Read it out.
Fantastic name. Doesn't make me cringe at all. Fungal Infection. 1 black for an instant. Target creature gets -1/-1 until end of turn. Create a 1/1 green sapling token.
That's not skullduggery. Get out of here.
It's kind of skullduggery. It's not, obviously not going to be as powerful as old Skulldugs was. But this is super tricky, and it's going to make combat, I think, really interesting. Pre-blocks.
Yeah.
Pop this off. Get a trade. Get a chump or a second trade. Makes this kind of miserable at times, I think.
I think of this, the power of this card will certainly depend on how prevalent X1s are, but this seems like a card, if it's a common, that's going to keep X1s in check pretty hard, because this punishes that kind of strategy.
Oh man, imagine ever killing a full card with this.
Yeah,
an actual
imagine
full
killing
magic
like
card.
If they attack with 2 Goblin Pikers, this is just a 1 mana 2/1. Like, if that exists, that's ridiculous.
I don't know, man. Other than that, set seems sweet. I can't wait to draft it. Ethan, what's the line? You think we're going to go over or under 200 drafts?
I think I'll go over 200 for this format for sure. Ooh. Yeah. It's also going to be out for a while, too. I mean, now that we're on like all big sets all the time, all triple draft formats, like I think we'll be in the 200, over 200 range for sure.
We got a core set this summer, right?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I think I'll take the over because I'm not sure what the core set is going to bring us, if that's going to be a successful return to core sets, if you want to call it that or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be very curious.
I was never a fan.
Oh, really? Yeah. I'm curious to see what they do with it, if it's just going to be like the same kind of thing, or if they got a new spin on it.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I definitely did enjoy, like M10 and M11 were such important sets for Magic history. It's just by the time I got to like M15 Origins, I just stopped caring for some reason. I don't know what it was, just the way I was feeling about Magic at that time. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm hesitant of it coming back because I just feel like the same problems are just going to arise and we're just going to have that similar lull again. So I'm fine with bringing it back, though. We'll see how it goes. yeah,
I think they're generally pretty unpopular draft formats, at least the ones that I played. But I still really liked them. I think, you know, the regular sets are complicated, and so it's nice to play just sort of a, I don't know, for lack of a better word, a dumbed down limited environment.
Grassroots.
You know, I don't want to think as much or whatever, or I don't want to take as long to learn the format, and I'm just gonna, you know, I'm gonna play some grizzly bears and some 2/2 flyers and and go to town. So I think there's something to be said for it, but it does make a very long hiatus between Dominaria and the fall set. So I think I will still be under 200 drafts, though, even though Ethan might go above, but I think I'll be well.
By a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, probably like 195 or so, I would say.
All right.
Yeah.
What if we add all those together? Will we get to 200?
I don't think so. Well, Dave.
I don't think so either.
Dave's a degenerate. So, I mean, I don't think Dave plays even 100 drafts, but maybe.
That's what I was thinking. Dave would need to do like 150 to maybe keep pace.
Yeah.
You guys are making me feel so good about the way I use my time.
if there's a GP, I can do some real numbers, but if there's not, no, I only do a couple a week then.
I think if it's really fun, I would probably play more than 20. But the last few have kind of not felt as fun for me, so I didn't really go too deep into them. People seem excited, so. And Ethan, if you can have a good time playing 200 drafts, then hey, good for you.
I have a sickness. That's really the thing that keeps me going.
to be fair, we don't have a limited podcast, so we're not forced to. I'm not saying you're forced to draft, but you know what I mean. It's beneficial for you to be in tune, like you said, on the metagame and doing a lot of drafts. It definitely helps you. And when you enjoy it more, too, you're obviously going to draft more.
But you've got to play some high-level stuff, like, too.
What's mm-hmm. that?
I said you got to play some high-level stuff. You said you only play intermediate queues.
Well,
like, you got to do some mocks events or some PTQs, or no desire there.
Well, I am going to GP Columbus. That's a team sealed event, nice. But I have no interest in becoming like a pro Magic player. And I also, you know, if I like had to like qualify, qualified for like a PT, that means I would have to play Standard. You guys, 10 rounds of Standard? No, thank you. I have like dreams and aspirations of maybe one day being on the coverage team. That would be a very cool thing for me. But something like grinding out some mocks to get to a PT or something, that doesn't sound good. I'll just stay in my room and stream for the folks who want to watch me be a degenerate.
Well, you know, at the Pro Tour, you could just play the draft and then scoop.
Just drop.
No, nice. Don't drop, because you want to just scoop and be like, and then you can be the limited master or whatever. I forget what the world slot is. When you win the most limited.
Yeah, that's right. The draft master.
Once you get to the Pro Tour, you'd be like, you know, whatever, undefeated on the Pro Tour and limited. I mean, that's a clickbaity title.
Yeah,
would work.
You could like evolve your name. Instead of Lord Tupperware, you can go like Master Ooh. Tupperware if you get to draft master. And then you can be like the Masters of Limited, like the Masters of the Universe.
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
We have the power. All right, well, we're almost out of time here, but I wanted to do an update on the Card Hoarder Deck Challenge. So, Dave, you challenged me to colorless Eldrazi to play that in the league. And no, I did not go 5-0 or 4-1, so no video, Aww. Unfortunately. I went the dreaded 3-2, so I got one treasure chest. Yeah, it is perfect. That's the summary of my Magic career, of course. But I kind of played the deck poorly. I played against Living End, which I don't think I've ever played against in Modern. Of all the matches I've played, it was the first time playing against Living End.
You got Chalice. Did you not just Chalice them for zero?
Try to. They just blow it up, man.
That's true. That's fair. That's fair.
That match in particular, I just played very poorly, so that was part of it. I played against Storm twice. I thought the Storm matchup would have been not great, but I ended up beating it both times,
huh.
sideboard games. I just got relics out early and just you put a clock and they can't. I mean, they can combo you, but it's very, very difficult to do it if you're pressuring them that fast. I did play a practice league, and I found this to be true, that the white creature decks that destroy your lands to be a huge problem, and I faced against the white-red taxes deck that I've played. I got just absolutely destroyed by that deck. So lost to that deck, and I played against the black-white Eldrazi taxes deck, which I lost to twice in the league before I did, but this one, I actually beat it somehow in this league. So, Dave, not a huge fan of the Eldrazi, so I'm hoping you give me something a little bit better this week.
Oh, I got something sweet for you this week. Standard is going pretty soon. We talked about Dominaria coming out, and a lot of impactful cards there are going to change up Standard. So you gotta send it into the good night. You know, you gotta ship it off. I'm gonna challenge you to play Blue-Red God Pharaoh's Gift, the breakout deck at GP Seattle. There's a couple of lists you can choose from. I would recommend Grayson Roberts' version. So okay. I think they're all the same main deck, and it's just sideboard changes. So that's the one I would recommend.
Sweet, I can get behind this. I like graveyard decks, so I can definitely try that out.
Yeah,
I've always wanted to play some God Pharaoh's decks, but yes, like Ethan, I'm like, standard. I don't want to play standard.
The big, for those of you who didn't see any of the coverage, the big trick this deck does and why it's red instead of the traditional black or white, which God Pharaoh's Gift has been in the past, is that you use Combat Celebrant in combination with God Pharaoh's Gift to get multiple God Pharaoh Gift triggers in one turn. So how many Combat Celebrants are in your graveyard, that's how many times you're going to get to God Pharaoh's Gift.
Okay, good to know, because I know nothing about this deck, so I'm going in cold.
Nice.
I think I'll do another like practice league before that, and then hopefully stream on Friday, although this week is super busy for me, so I'm hoping I can get a stream in, and hopefully the chat can yell at me and tell me how to play better. No, I won't
get
listen
that
to
sweet,
chat.
Sweet Twitch so. Chat edge.
Oh, yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah.
But we are about to wrap up. We are going to head over to the Card Order After Dark segment.
We're listening in on radio.
Hello and welcome to Card Order After Dark, your mature radio station for mature and adult topics. I am your DJ, Dave C. And today's topic, we're going to be talking about favorite vacation experiences. We want to give a big shout out first and foremost to everyone that gave us feedback on the segment and that gave us suggestions. And one of them that we landed on were favorite vacation experiences. I thought this one was cool. First up, I guess, Connor, do you have one to give us?
Yeah, sure. And I honestly could just pick like going to Europe or some other exotic location, but I'm actually going to go with something very, very simple. And it's just my old family vacations growing up in Michigan. We would just rent a small cabin on the lake, and seriously, that was my favorite experience, just being lazy by the lake. So most nice. Of the vacations involve a ton of walking, sightseeing. Nope, not this trip. You just go swimming, bike ride, do whatever you want. And honestly, this is like where these trips, I developed my love for card games. We used to play a lot of cribbage and Millborn. I used to play both of those with my dad a bunch on these kind of trips because we just had a lot of time to kill. Back in those days, you didn't have cell phones. We didn't have TV, so we had to find ways to occupy our time. We've been talking about doing that, going back there one day with the whole family. I'm hoping we will at some point. So I'm going with that. Boring old Michigan. I like to do nothing. My wife likes to do nothing as well, so I'm hoping we get to do that.
Fantastic. Our guest next, Ethan, do you have an experience? Maybe you can...
Yeah, this feels like maybe it's a cop-out, but I'm going to pick my honeymoon. My wife and I went to Austria for a week, and one day in particular, we like sort of like packed it all in. We went on this like pretty rigorous hike, and then went to like a day spa, and then had like a really great meal after that. It felt like we like did it all, like worked out, got to relax, got to eat a great dinner. That was like definitely the standout day of that week that we did there.
Where in Austria did you go?
We sort of went all over. I'm going to forget city names now. Oh, gosh. We went to Vienna for a few days, and then we, like, drove across, stopped in, like, wine country. Then we were in Strasbourg for a few days, and then we were, like, in the middle of nowhere. And that's where the hike was. I'm forgetting where it was. But, nice. Okay. Yeah, so we sort of, like, drove in a circle.
Nice. I'm going to Munich and Salzburg later this year, so I've never been to either, but Salzburg's in Austria, I believe.
Yes.
And, yes. And so I was just curious.
Yeah, Salzburg is fun.
I like it. The exact opposite of my answer. Perfect.
Yeah. But it's pretty uncharacteristic for me because I do love doing nothing. But that was it's good to pull me out of my shell every once and again.
Nathaniel, you seem like a very traveled person, so I'm expecting a big answer here.
A big answer? Well, it's always hard because, you know, you sort of remember the trips you took recently, fondly or whatever. And I was gonna mention something on my honeymoon as well, but then he even said it was a cop-out, so so now I'm not going to. No, actually, I'm still going to say that. I'm still going to say it, just in case my wife listens to the episode. But we went to Amsterdam for our honeymoon. And this was before we would, like, do any sort of fancy dining. And so we were walking around and found this fancy restaurant. I think it was called, like, Dylan or something like that. I was like, F it, let's do it. Even though it was so expensive in comparison to what I was willing to spend on food. But we did it, and there was, like, we were kind of speculating as to what might be on this tasting menu. Because it didn't really say, and it's sort of chef's whim. And I was like, you know what? It's probably going to be those pigeons that we saw outside. And then the main dish came and it was pigeon. And I don't think it was those pigeons necessarily, but it was still fantastic. It tasted good, surprisingly. But, you know, I think it was where I found my affinity for the finer things when I can even like and enjoy pigeon. But a secondary one, I would say, recently, last year when I went to Scotland, there was two places in Scotland, but just the scotch and going to the distilleries was awesome. And just so we can keep it, you know, in the sort of adult topic stuff, but learning yeah. about and drinking alcohol are two of my favorite things. So,
that's a pretty good answer. I like that. I am also going to cop out, because you guys have heard of the one I've done before, because I've talked about it in the cast, and it's the Nishiki Market in Kyoto, Japan, and it was from my time at the Pro Tour, so that was great. Tali came with me, and it was one of the most beautiful places I've gone. Also, I've recognized about myself recently in the last couple of years that I remember a lot of good foods that I have in places opposed to the places themselves. So last time me and Kali were, you know, daydreaming about going back to Japan and what we liked about it, she listed, you know, the beautiful mountains and this part of the city and the temples and this very certain temple. And I was like, yeah, and the sushi and the ramen and all the sashimi we had over there. So I'm very attracted to great places for food. And it's some of the nicest food I had in this beautiful long hallway with stained glass over it. Some of the nicest ramen I've ever had in my life on the market there. So a bit of a cop-out. You guys have heard this answer before, but definitely the market in Kyoto.
I've heard that the toilets in Japan are really cool, too.
Yeah, they're very, very futuristic. Right? But I hate them because a lot of them have, like, warmed toilet seats.
Oh, yeah?
But we went over, like, at the hottest part of the year. So I didn't want my toilet seat to be warm.
Well, it needs to be the opposite. It needs to do heating yeah. and cooling. You can't do just one. That's like,
yeah, maybe come on. Maybe there were settings. Maybe I just didn't understand the settings.
It could be, yeah. You know?
I wish you said that as your answer right away. Favorite vacation experience?
Toilets. Next question.
Yeah.
when we were in Hawaii, we stayed at this resort, and the toilet was insane. It had a heated seat. It had a bidet. But it was like a bidet that, when I see a bidet, I think of, like, you know, those drinking fountain-looking ones that freak you out. It was yeah. or like a traditional bidet, but now they're like part of the toilet. It was crazy. I was impressed. I was impressed by the toilet scene. My wife always says whenever we go to a restaurant, I always come out and make some comment about the bathroom, and she like calls me out on it. But I'm like, oh, they had really nice whatever, insert something. But I appreciate a good bathroom.
I get impressed by nice showers, like, you know, yeah. kind of waterfall style showers. Yeah. I'm always like, wow, one day in my house. You know.
This seems like a good future After Dark topic. Bathrooms and showers.
You should. I mean, a waterfall shower is amazing. We have one in our house. It's incredible. It makes every morning the best. It was like $100. I mean, awesome. Not that that's not nothing, but I mean, it's not crazy expensive to get one either. So I would recommend it.
On a streamer's salary, I don't know.
All right, Dave. I got a good birthday gift for you. Then I'll send you a shower head.
I like how I was the only one that didn't mention going on the trip with my wife, so
hopefully nice.
She doesn't listen, so she's never gonna know. I mean,
to be fair, my wife doesn't listen to it either, but I do enjoy spending time with her, so
perfect. All right, though. We are out of time, so that's going to do it for this episode. Don't forget about upcoming events on Magic Online this week. Modern Cube is still up, but Dominaria, it's going to be out next week. Can't wait. It's going to be great. For premier events, Saturday there's a sealed RPTQ and a sealed Mox Open on Sunday. For context, hit me up on Twitter at Connor P. O'Donnell. Check out the other podcasts I work on, Game Podcast with Jerry Thompson and Brian Gottlieb, and WCW versus NWO Podcast, the wrestling podcast Dave and I do. It's reviewing the NWO era of WCW pay-per-view by pay-per-view. So Ethan, our guest, thank you so much for being on. Where can our listeners find you, and how can they support the show?
You can check me out on Twitch at twitch.tv/LordTupperware. You can hit me up on Twitter at LordTupperware. Please check out our podcast, Lords of Limited. It's available on iTunes, Stitcher, MTGCast, Google Play, Libsyn. You can really just Google it and you'll find it. And please give my podcast partner, Mr. Metronome, some love. twitch.tv/MrMetronome and at Mr. Metronome on Twitter.
Gotta mention the Patreon, man.
Oh, gotta mention the Patreon, thank you. And if you're so inclined and you want to support the show financially, you can do so at patreon.com/lordsoflimited, where you can give back to us and show your love for the show that way.
Yep, it's an awesome show. I try to listen to it when it comes out every week. And I will put all the links, of course, in the show notes. Dave Nathaniel, where can our listeners contact you guys?
They can find me on Twitch, though I've been down in the dumps since my RPTQ, so I've not been on since Friday, but I'll be on again this week. I'm Dave C, Dave S-E-A on there. On Twitter, you want to give me your hot takes, throw them at me there. I'm Dave C89. We got a YouTube channel. Me and Connor put up some content there. We are called The Lotus Club.
And for me, I'm back on Twitter. At Cardholder, typically me replying back to you. And if you want to have a lengthier discussion, email's best, Nathaniel@cardholder.com.
All right. That will wrap up the episode. Ethan, thank you so much for being on.
Thanks so much for having me, guys. I had a blast.
Same here. And remember, you can find the show every week on cardholder.com. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.